copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
This topic of depression, I teach at Covenant Seminary in the United States and have been teaching counseling for about 25 years. But my background originally was in medicine and in psychiatry. And then I have also been associate pastor of a church. So in a way, I have ranged across the medical, the psychiatric, the pastoral, the theological aspects of depression, and I bring them together in this context this afternoon. I wrote a book many years ago on depression, and just right after that book was published, it was almost like the Lord said to me, "You think you know something about depression? Let me show you a thing or two." Because I knew it all up here academically, but I had never really experienced depression until a whole lot of things happened in my life. My sister died in childbirth. Her husband, a few years later, took his own life. A lot of difficult changes at work. And I found myself spiraling into a place I'd never been before, where life looked pretty grim. And I said to my wife one day, "I feel like a ship that's sinking, and I don't know how to get out of here." Well, through various friends and help of different forms, I came out of that before getting too deeply into it. But it certainly gave me a much deeper understanding of the pain of people who are in what we would call serious or clinical depression. So this was the second edition of the book in which I talk more about that at the beginning of the book. So the question that comes to us is very often within the church, is depression sickness or is it sin? And on the one hand, we read a lot in the secular literature, depression is a mental illness that needs treatment. On the other hand, within the church, we hear quite often depression is a sin. At least as one Christian counselor put it, depression comes as a result of a failure of self-control and self-discipline. Now, you can see there's a whole spectrum of opinions in between these two rather extreme views that I'm going to explore a bit here. But in the last half of the 20th century, we were talking about an epidemic of depression. Many, many more people seem to be diagnosed with it. And I think there has been a real increase in the amount of depression and anxiety, certainly since the mid-1900s. But we also have been, the mental health profession, have been describing it, defining it, and diagnosing it a whole lot more. And the pharmaceutical industry have been funding all the research on depression because they want you to take their antidepressants. So that also comes into why there may be an increase in the amount of depression. But we certainly know that it is a serious depression uses huge number of hours of work, takes people out of work, it destroys marriages, it destroys families. It is a very serious problem in our society. This was the New Yorker magazine, and the caption on this was, "No wonder you feel good. These are loaded with antidepressants." So we have many people taking antidepressants in our culture, especially in the United States and certainly Western Europe. Now, what we experience from day to day is most of us have times of feeling blue, feeling low, feeling down. That's a normal human experience. We get sad, we get discouraged, we get frustrated, we perhaps are grieving the loss of something in our lives, a person or a job or a pet or something like that. But there's a range from just the blues to severe depression where people feel despair, hopelessness, and even to the point of wanting to take their own lives. And it's that end, we need as pastors and as counselors to be able to discern where to encourage people to get help. Is it something you as a pastor take on to help, or a friend to help someone? Or is this person's depression severe enough that you need to encourage them to go to a professional? And that's where we talk about clinical or major depression. So we have some ways of discerning when this depression gets serious enough to that it should go towards a professional. There are a number of really good books that describe the internal pain of depression. This book, Darkness Visible, by William Steyer, and it's just a thin little book, but he describes very vividly the pain of serious depression. So some people, of course, get to a place. We had a year in St. Louis, Missouri, where three pastors took their own lives. In the United States, 90 people commit suicide every day. And so some people get to this place where, as this man said, the pain grew and grew, and I began to experience suicidal thoughts. I realized that life for me was at a desperate impasse. I thought of the garage as a place where I might sit in the car and inhale carbon monoxide. I look at the rafters in the attic and think of them as places where I might hang myself. I looked at the sharp object as being an implement for my wrist. And we know that the difference between here, between 1999 and 2014, in terms of the suicide rates, but there has been a steady climbing rate here. Every year, 40,000 Americans kill themselves, and veterans coming back from battleground situations are killing themselves. 20 of them are killing themselves every day, or did in 2014. Men tend to commit suicide 3 to 4 times more than women, at least successfully take their own lives. Women attempt suicide about 12 times more than men, but they do not succeed so often. Men tend to use more deadly instruments of guns or hanging or carbon monoxide. So it really is a very serious problem, and we see the difference here between over the age range. You see a peak here. The middle years, and it's thought that many people at that time of life are questioning, what have I done with my life, and often are facing disillusionment and hopelessness that their marriage has fallen apart, their kids are on drugs, they haven't got the dream career that they wished that they had. And of course, suicide rates in Eastern Europe and Russia are even higher than the United States and Western Europe. Here I have a map here showing you where the highest rates of suicide are, in the darker colors. And there are all sorts of sociological reasons that are behind this. So let me just tell you the way in which we define major or serious or clinical depression. We define it this way: when someone is depressed, has a depressed mood, or loss of pleasure and interest in life for at least 2 weeks and almost every day. So it's not just a day or two. It has to last for a while, for at least 2 weeks. And most of the time, now we go in and out of days of feeling blue, feeling depressed. Most of us don't have an ongoing deep depression like this. Plus, 5 of the following things: many people lose their appetite, as some people to the serious extent of losing weight. Some people just eat for comfort and put on weight. Sleep in And many people is disturbed so that they wake at 2 or 3 in the morning, ruminating, preoccupied about negative things. And that's typical of older people. Young people, teens, tend to sleep on in the day, sort of an exaggeration of their normal habit sleep patterns. And then many people feel just loss of energy, exhausted, move around very slowly, sit around. Some people get more anxious when they are depressed, so anxiety and depression can go together, and they just get very agitated and irritable and anxious. So, and then people feel worthless and often feel guilty when they don't need to feel guilty. Then slow thinking, loss of concentration, indecisiveness, and especially if people are more perfectionist, they find it very difficult to make decisions. They may get completely paralyzed in their depression. And then suicidal ideas that I've described. Now, sometimes we talk about psychotic depression. People in really serious depression may have delusions or paranoia. So they might believe that they have a disease. They might believe they have cancer, a tumor of some sort, when there's no medical evidence for it. They might believe that they give off a nasty smell, or that they're being followed by the KGB or the CIA, or so to have paranoid beliefs. And then for Christians, of course, it's very common that someone who's depressed feels that prayer is completely useless. Feels like the heavens are brass, God is not interested in them, he's abandoned them, and the Bible seems meaningless. So it's very hard for them to gain comfort. And if you go back in the literature of the Puritan writers, Christians back in the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, you find classic descriptions of all of these symptoms, people feeling abandoned by God. And when we will look in a moment at some of the biblical experiences of depression. Now, women get depressed. It appears that women get depressed twice as often as men. And it's partly because men and women express depression differently. But there is a real difference, too, I think, because women, that there are times where women are affected by hormones at puberty, around childbirth, menopause. There's a rise in depression in women. So the change in hormones makes them more vulnerable. Women tend to be more relationally sensitive to losses, to disruptions in relationships. They tend to have experienced more abuse. They experience more cultural oppression by men. So there's good reason why it should be more common. But women tend to express it in terms of sadness, of crying, of feeling worthless. Men, on the other hand, it's not so obvious because they may just withdraw, or they may just get more irritable and angry. So you don't see it as sadness. Because sadness and tears are more shameful for men, so they're not going to show that to the world. So it comes out in maybe job problems or somatic, physical problems. And men tend to deal with it in a different way. They become workaholics, they become sexaholics, they may become drug addicts, alcoholics, and then they also, as we've seen, take their own lives more frequently, whereas women, it seems, are a bit less shamed by depression and tend to go and talk with friends or with a counselor or with a doctor. So it's important that when we are talking about depression, we recognize there's a whole range of sadness and discouragement that we all experience, but because of the fall and because sin has come into the world and caused all sorts of disruptions, we're prone to extremes of depression, or in some people who have bipolar disorder, what we used to call manic depression, they may be prone to mania as well. So they may swing between depression That depression should be, it should be severe depression over on the right. It's got in the wrong place there. And hypomania, which is less than mania or mania. And then there's this middle ground in between. And in mania, people will be full of energy, non-stop talking, exuberant, happy, laughing, joking, irritable, anxious sometimes, but the very opposite of depression. And it's very important that they get the right medication to help to stabilize their moods. And we'll talk about that at a later time. So we have to ask, when we meet someone who's depressed, is this an appropriate, maybe it's a reaction because of grief and sadness and loss? Is there some cause, and what is the context of this depression? How can we understand it? Now here you have the symptoms of mania also in contrast to depression. So the biblical experience, we see it in the Psalms, of course, particularly, where David says, "How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart?" Or, my God, why have you forsaken me?" A prophetic psalm, but also a real experience of David. And we can think of others of being of the writer of Lamentations, "He's made me walk in darkness." Now, we don't know how long these experiences were. They may have just been for a day. They might have been for weeks or months. And very often, the psalmists talk about physical symptoms. The writer to Lamentations talks about physical symptoms. I'm glad Psalm 88 is there. It's the only one that ends where the darkness is my closest friend. All the others move through to a place of trust and hope again. And this passage from Job, "And now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have taken hold of me. The night racks my bones, and the pain that gnaws me takes no rest. You have turned cruel to me. With the might of your hand you persecute me. When I hoped for good, evil came. When I waited for light, darkness came. My inward parts are in turmoil and never still." That's a very good description of depression. Now, we need to make a distinction between grief and depression. About 10% of people grieving the loss of a loved one will go into serious depression. But grief tends to come in waves, and then it goes again, and then another wave crashes in on you. And there's usually a very clear reason for the sadness and the sorrow in terms of a loss experience. Whereas depression tends to be an ongoing daily grind, not the waves and the intermittence of grief. And in depression, there's very often not a clear reason that you can see easily. If you think of the men in Scripture, of Job, of Elijah, all of these getting to a point where they wished that they could die. "Take my life, Lord." Or Job saying, "I wish I had never been born." But each of them, if you look at the stories, you remember very different circumstances. Elijah, after the great victory with the prophets of Baal, and he gets incredibly discouraged, exhausted, runs into the desert 200 miles to hide in a cave, and deeply depressed. Moses, with the responsibility of this huge congregation in the wilderness, and he's in close to burnout with too much to do, and Jonah angry with God because God is not a merciful, forgiving God over Nineveh, and Jonah doesn't like the way God is, so he says, "If that's the sort of God you are, I don't want anything to do with you, take my life." And if you look back over the centuries, you can see men of God and other secular heroes and writers who have experienced severe depression. Luther and William Cooper, Spurgeon, Lincoln, Churchill, Spurgeon says, I am the subject of depressions of spirit so fearful that I hope none of you ever get to such extremes of wretchedness as I go to. We very speedily care for bodily diseases. They're too painful to let us slumber in silence, and they soon urge us to seek a physician or a surgeon for our healing. Oh, if we were as much alive to the more serious wounds of our inner man. Nothing on earth, he says, that the human frame can suffer to be compared with despondency and prostration of mind. And then these women, too, some Christians, some not, have been open about their experience of depression. And in the, as I mentioned, in the 1600s, Richard Baxter wrote this treatise, The Causes and Cures of Melancholy and Overmuch Sorrow. And he describes the interaction between the biological and the psychological and the spiritual, much in the way that I would talk about the causes of depression. He didn't have the same biological knowledge of the causes as we do now. John Calhoun in the 1800s, The Nature and Signs of Melancholy in the True Christian. So it's not something new. It's something we as fallen human beings have wrestled with since the time of the fall, I think. So this gives you a little flavor, I think, of the ways in which depression is seen and the spectrum of human experience and the commonality of this.